You're listening to Voices from the 2008 Membership Conference of the ACLU. I'm Matt Dellinger. With me is Cal Penn, who recently can be seen reprising the role of Kumar in the film Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay, a sequel to the 2004 cult classic Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. And he's also on the critically acclaimed television series House. Thanks for joining us, Cal.
Thanks for having me.
I want to play a little clip from Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay.
Please.
And in this scene, you are being detained by Rob Corddry.
Okay.
Do we have the right to make a phone call?
I'm sorry. You want rights now. You want freedoms right now. Is it time? Is it freedom o'clock? Guess what?
What?
Where you guys are going, they have never even heard of rights.
Well, where are we going?
And of course, you guys are headed to Guantanamo.
Right.
How do you make Gitmo funny?
I'll
How
paraphrase...
did you? Because I think you succeeded. So
thank you.
How did you?
I'll paraphrase something that one of our two screenwriters said. When they got that question, they said, you know, sometimes the most ambitious forms of comedy come from the greatest sources of tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the keys, you know, is that this is obviously a satire. There was clearly no effort to depict the real Guantanamo Bay. And one of the ways in which you can structure a story around something that egregious, I think, is when it enters or has entered the pop culture psyche to such a degree where, you know, I feel like 4 years ago you could never even make a joke about war or torture.
Yeah.
But things have gotten to such a ridiculous extent that we feel like one of the ways of dealing with this as Americans who are proud of what we should be standing for are to make jokes about it. You have to laugh. If, you know, what better way to deal with this than to laugh at ourselves at some point?
So are you saying that laughing is the first step, that it leads to serious discussion? Or,
well, no. I mean, look, to be perfectly honest, this is a very sophomoric film about fart jokes, and that's all it was intended to be.
It's a buddy movie.
It is. It's a teen movie. It's a buddy movie. So any discussion about the political relevance is strictly secondary. The guys who wrote it are, you know, two guys from New Jersey who wanted to come up with the most sensationalist title they could think of. And that's honestly the truth behind how the title came to fruition and why the movie was about what it was about.
So the title came before the film?
I think so. Probably around the same time. But
yeah.
They wanted to play with, if you've seen the first film, you know, it's just about two guys who are going to get hamburgers. But along the way, they deconstruct, you know, all these racial attitudes. And basically, our generation is a post-racial group of folks for the most part. And so what better way to deal with the rather archaic modes of thinking that past generations have gone through than to make a movie about it?
Right.
So this is sort of a similar thing where the whole point is to go and laugh with your friends for about an hour and a half. But certainly you can talk about why we're able to have the type of satire that you can have with it. Some of our influences have been The Daily Show, Chappelle Show, you know, shows that have done things like this in the past.
You have a very interesting background. You went to a performing arts high school. Your bachelor's is in sociology,
yes,
if I'm correct. And you're an adjunct professor of?
Yes, I'm just finishing up a semester at the University of Pennsylvania.
And you're also pursuing a graduate certificate in international security.
Yes, sir.
At Stanford. That's quite a resume for for someone who's also had a successful acting career.
Thank you. Yeah.
How do you do it all? And where do all these interests come together?
You know, in high school, I had the good fortune of being able to go to a public high school that had magnet programs in performing arts and international studies and business and medicine. And for the first 2 years, I went to the international studies program. And then I really wanted to become a filmmaker or an actor and transferred to the performing arts program. And didn't realize till much later that most public high schools don't have these sorts of resources. So when I went to college, I started as a theater major, ended up switching a bunch of times, and landed in sociology. And it's just always been, you know, those have sort of been the two interests of mine. So you kind of do it in your downtime, I guess. I don't know. It's something I enjoy doing, you know. And as far as the teaching goes, one of my frustrations in film school was that, you know, a lot of the social classes that are very theoretical about the media, don't really address what it's like to be in a production meeting in a, you know, in a studio, or what it's like to be on set. And the flip side of that is, you know, the filmmaking classes or production classes don't often talk about the ways in which folks receive images. You know, you mentioned 24 or the Guantanamo Bay movie. I mean, those are great examples
exactly.
of things that are, from a producing perspective, you make those to entertain people, whether it's action or comedy or drama. But those images can be received in certain ways from folks that that the filmmakers maybe haven't intended or haven't really thought about. And that was the impetus behind that class, is to bridge the gap between those two.
And you feel it makes you a better actor?
I think so. I mean,
yeah.
Look, when you read about... One of the best classes I took in college was a criminal justice class, and we would go and interview judges and prisoners and
right.
cops, and man, the stories that you hear, those firsthand ethnographic stories, definitely come into play when you're playing those characters.
Now, your grandparents were involved in the Indian civil rights movement?
Yes.
Do you consider yourself an activist?
You know, that word has such baggage
it's
with
loaded.
It, both
loaded.
Positive and negative,
yeah.
doesn't it? In our house, the dinner table conversation with our grandparents was... I thought it was the same as everyone's. You know, your grandparents sit around and tell you stories about what it was like when they were younger. And for my grandparents, that meant that they were talking about, you know, not using salt or going on marches with Gandhi. And I mean, these are the stories you hear growing up, right? And then
yeah.
at some point between, I guess, age 17 and 23, you sit there and you go, wait a second. My grandparents were in the Indian independence movement,
yeah.
which is the, you know, that nonviolent civil disobedience is the background of our own civil rights movement. And so it was always just a family value. So do I consider myself an activist? No, not really. But those sorts of values were just what you grew up with. So it was just the expectation.
What brings you to the conference, I guess we should ask?
Well, I was invited to talk about... the role that I guess Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay
right.
plays in this discussion about torture, civil rights, and the media. And I think, I certainly have my own opinions on it outside of my acting, and that's why I'm here. Yeah,
we've just wound up a rather historic Democratic primary season in which you took part, and you know, it was a race between a woman and an African American. Do you feel like racism and sexism are on the run? I mean, is this a watershed moment? Is this a sign of progress? Or
I think it's undoubtedly a sign of progress, but it's sort of a funny question because I don't think most people who have volunteered for either campaign did it for reasons of race or gender.
Right.
I think we
and you
did
hear
it,
that a lot.
I think it's the honest answer. I think
yeah.
we've the past. Not just the past 8 years, but maybe the past 20 years of, you know, two families essentially controlling the White House, you realize that there is such a need for change. We've got, especially if you're young, you know, you've got friends or family over in Iraq or Afghanistan. Parents' generation has now lost scores of jobs because of things like NAFTA. The environment's going down the drain. I mean, just the list of things, healthcare, it just goes on. And it really doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican or which candidate you supported. But it seems like folks were volunteering for, you know, Hillary, Barack, John McCain, Mike Huckabee, because they wanted some sort of a change. And so are all of those things a sign of progress related to race and gender? Absolutely. But I think in the greatest way, which is that folks who were volunteering for different campaigns did so because they really thought that this person, whoever they're volunteering for, is the best person for the job. The great speech that Senator Clinton gave yesterday touched on that there were a lot of firsts. And the nice thing about those firsts is that it will no longer be surprising. People will no longer question whether somebody who's African-American or female
yeah.
or both.
She wants it to be unremarkable.
Could, yeah. I mean, it should be sort of a, you know, if you hear people talking about it. I know all of us who were working on various campaigns, whenever people would talk about race or gender, you would kind of yawn and change the channel and be like, it's just boring, man, you know?
Now,
I guess for the older generation, it's maybe an issue, but a lot of us never felt like it was an issue.
Right. Another person who was raised, the specter of Ronald Reagan was raised quite a bit over the primary season
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason. And I think if Ronald Reagan were alive today, he might suggest to you that you go into politics yourself. You are an actor. You have
sure.
a background in sociology. You have
uh-huh.
a penchant for socially aware comedy and drama.
Right.
Is this a possibility?
That's a great question, and it's something that I've only thought about because people keep asking me about it the last couple of months. They cite Reagan and Schwarzenegger, and I kind of look and go, I don't know that I want to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but he's our governor, so why not? It's, you know, look, that's certainly not the end game at this point, but you never know. I'm not opposed to the idea. What a politician answer to give you. My gosh. Yeah. I'm not opposed to it, but it's not something I'm actively thinking
about. So you're denying that you're running for president in 2016.
Right. But if McCain picks Bobby Jindal, then I'm definitely throwing my hat in the ring.
All right. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Cal.
Thank you.
You can also hear Cal Penn discuss his role in the TV series 24 in conversation with the filmmaker Alex Gibney. Go to ACLU.org. If you'd like to subscribe to a feed of these conversations from the 2008 membership conference, just visit the iTunes Music Store and search for ACLU. This is Matt Dellinger.